Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the first canto, chapter 1, text 21. Kali Magavatam Agnaya, Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam, Astina Dirga Satrena, Katayam Shakshana Hare. Kali Magavatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Shakshana Hare Kali Magavatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam
Asina Dirga Satrena
Tayam Sakshana Hare Kali Magatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare Kali Magatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare Kali Magatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare Kali Magatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare Kali Magatam Agnaya Kshetresmin Vaishnave Vayam
Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare
Kali Magatam Agnaya
Asina Dirga Satrena Katayam Sakshana Hare
Kalim. The Age of Kali.
Iron Age of Quarrel.
Agatam. Having arrived. Agnaya. Knowing this. Kshetre, in this tract of land. Asmin, in this. Vaishnave, specially meant for the devotee of the Lord. Vayam, we. Astina, seated. Dirga, prolonged. Satrena, for performance of sacrifices. Katayam, In the words of.
Sakshana.
With time at our disposal.
Hare.
Of the personality of Godhead. Translation. Knowing well that the age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead and in this way perform sacrifice. Repeat. Knowing well that the age of Kali
has already begun,
we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead and in this way perform sacrifice. Okay, purport by Srila Prabhupada. This age of Kali is not at all suitable for self-realization by the methods practiced in Satya Yuga, the Golden Age, or Treta or Dwapara Yugas, the Silver and Copper Ages. For self-realization, the people in Satya Yuga, living a lifetime of 100,000 years, were able to perform prolonged meditation. And in Treta Yuga, when the duration of life was 10,000 years, self-realization was attained by performance of great sacrifice. And in the Dwapara Yuga, when the duration of life was 1,000 years, self-realization was attained by worship of the Lord. But in the Kali Yuga, the maximum duration of life being 100 years only, and that combined with various difficulties, the recommended process of self-realization is that of hearing and chanting of the holy name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord. The sages of Namasharanya began this process in a place meant specifically for the devotees of the Lord. They prepared themselves to hear the pastimes of the Lord over a period of 1,000 years. By the example of these sages, one should learn that regular hearing and recitation of the Bhagavatam is the only way for self-realization. Other attempts are simply a waste of time, for they do not give any tangible results. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached this system of Bhagavad Dharma, and he recommended that all those who were born in India should take the responsibility of broadcasting the messages of Lord Sri Krishna, primarily the message of Bhagavad Gita. And when one is well established in the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, he can take up the study of Srimad Bhagavatam for further enlightenment and self-realization. So here we are in the forest of Namasharanya, where this great thousand-year sacrifice is going to be held. And Namasharanya was chosen because that Lord Brahma, who was the engineer of this universe, he pictured a great wheel, and Namasharanya was actually the very hub of that wheel. And Prabhupada says that when sacrifices were performed at this place, at holy places, that it curbs the demonic tendency. It actually curbs demonic people. So that's very significant, especially in Kali Yuga. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we're not so much doing the 1,000-year sacrifice like we hear then. In Treta Yuga, people lived for how long? Anybody remember? How long? Yes. Almost. That's actually the next one. Yeah. In Treta Yuga, how many years? Anybody know? 100,000. No. Yeah, 100,000. Oh, I'm sorry. You were right. I was wrong. Okay, yeah. Satya Yuga is 100,000 years. That's right. And Treta Yuga, 10,000 years. And Dwarpa is 1,000. Kali, 100. So if you can imagine living for that many years, like if someone lives to be 100 years, that's considered to be a very long life, you know? So that's how things have reduced. Like in Satya Yuga, you know, virtue and religion and wisdom were at the full extent. So they were able to have these very special sacrifices. And, you know, everyone, there was like 100% purity, but then in Treta Yuga, it's reduced by a quarter, and there's less religion, and there's less virtue, and there's less wisdom. And in Dwapara Yuga also, it's more reduced, and Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. Now, there's one verse in the Bhagavatam that we talked about in this chapter where it says that people in Kali Yuga, they're lazy, and they're unfortunate, they're misguided, they're unlucky. All of those things come along with this age. So what is the sacrifice that's really recommended for this age of Kali? What can we do? Like, for us, could we do a 1,000-year sacrifice like the sage of Namashranya are doing? No, nobody lives that long. So what is our method of sacrifice for this age? What can we do? Yes. Chant Hare Krishna, that's right. That is the way. In fact, there's another verse in Kalera Dosha and in Hey Rajan, and it says that even though, you know, we're so unfortunate in Kali Yuga, you know, so unlucky, so misguided, short lives, all of that, that there is one, there's something that completely kind of negates all of that, almost like it doesn't matter, and that is the chanting of the holy name. And that in this life, we're able to perfect, we're able to get the same result as people got who lived 100,000 years, 10,000 years, 1,000 years, just by chanting Hare Krishna. So that's why it's such an important activity for us. And not only for us, we also like to share it. And what's one of the ways we can share this chanting of Hare Krishna? How can we do that? How do we do that? What's just one of the ways? I know you know. Okay, book distribution, that's one way, for sure. People get the books and they read it, and there's actually, I have a great story. I'm going to try to read it before you leave. Wow, time's going by already. Yes? Distributing prasadam, exactly. And what about hearing the holy name? What can we do to help people hear the holy name? Yes? Harinam. When we go out on Harinam, and I was just reading, I heard that Prabhupada said that when you chant Hare Krishna, it goes around the world 7 times, purifying everything in its path. So I could never find out, like, where did that quote come from? So Nagaraj, he gave me a little slip of paper with the information on it. And Prabhupada said that it's well known that when any sound vibration begins, it goes around the world 7 times. He said, just like if you take a stone and you throw it in the water, how it has that ripple effect. Well, sound vibration also has that ripple effect. So as we're chanting, you know, as we're chanting outside in our backyard or wherever, that sound vibration is going on around the world so many times, purifying everything in its path, and that's so, it's so incredible. And Prabhupada said once that if it wasn't for the chanting of Hare Krishna, there would be no greenery left on the planet. Because in the Bhagavatam it says by the end of the age of Kali, we're only in the beginning of it, that there wouldn't be any greenery on the planet, and people would be very reduced in stature, a very unfortunate time, except for the fact that he even said the devotees would be hunted like deer for sport. It's hard to imagine, you know? That's one of the predictions. However, what happens at the end of Kali Yuga? What happens at the end of Kali Yuga? Yes. Yes, thank you. Kalki comes and he saves the devotees and he slays the demons. Of course, when he slays them, they get a certain kind of liberation with that. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, came with this message of chanting Hare Krishna. And he was so emphatic about the importance of reading the Bhagavad Gita and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, my daughter just got married last Saturday, and Ritavaja Maharaj, he gave a speech at her wedding, and it was a very nice speech, and at the end he had a Bhagavad Gita, and he gave it to Prita and Tulsi, and he said, I'm giving you this Bhagavad Gita, and if you read 2 pages a day at the end of the year, you'll have read the whole Bhagavad Gita. And I thought, wow, that's so doable, you know? Like, raise your hand if you don't think you can chant, if you can't read 2 pages a day. Okay, everybody can do it. So, you know, it's so easy. Krishna's made it so easy. He's made it so easy for us that some of the demigods, they can't wait to take birth on this planet because it's such a short lifespan. They think, okay, if I can take birth on the Earth planet and then I can perfect my life in 100 years, you know, I'll have it made. Like, it's harder if the lifetime is 1,000 years or 10,000 years or 100,000 years to do everything right. So in some ways, we're really lucky to be in this age, but only if we're really connected. Prabhupada gives the example, and the example is in the Bhagavad Gita, that Vishnu is like a big tree, and then all the branches and twigs, those are the living entities.
And as you water the tree with the chanting of Hare Krishna and sacrifice, all the branches and the leaves and the twigs, they all prosper. But if what happens if you take a branch of that tree and it just throw it off to the side, but you keep on watering it, what's going to happen? Is something going to happen? What's going to happen? It's nothing, right? It's just going to dry. I'm sorry. Oh, somebody had their hand raised? What's going to happen? Yeah, what's going to happen? That's right. It won't grow. It'll just kind of dry up. So since we're kind of like branches of Krishna, right? If we don't chant, what's going to happen to us? We're kind of dry. We're kind of going to dry up spiritually, and that can happen. So it's so important for us to keep that connection, keep connected, so we can stay very much alive in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was such a strong preacher that once he had a conversation with Yogi Bhajan, who was kind of a famous yogi in America, ahead of like the Sikh religion, and he came to Prabhupada to speak with him, and he was inviting Srila Prabhupada to come to a conference they were having in New Mexico. He said, please come to the conference. Prabhupada said, I didn't get an invitation. He said, no, you must have gotten it. He goes, no, I didn't get one. And Yogi Bhajan says, well, it's on the way. And we want you to come. People are coming from all over. We're going to get together, and we're going to have a conference to try to, you know, bring about peace. And Prabhupada said, it's not going to happen. Pretty much, it's not going to happen. You can write it down in your notebook. You know, that this is not the way to bring about peace. He said, because what is your common platform? How are you going to bring about peace? He said, well, we can share with one another our ideas, and then we can talk about it, and respect for each other, that'll help to bring about peace. And Prabhupada said, no, that's already there. You know, I can respect you, you can respect me, but real peace, it only comes about through sacrifice. And there's a wonderful verse in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suhidam Sarva Bhutanam Nyatvamam Shantam Richtati. And the translation of this is, as the Supreme Personal of Godhead, I am the beneficiary of all sacrifices. I am the Lord of all demigods. And I am the well-wisher of all living entities. So that is the only way that peace can be brought about. Even we look in our own community, so many different backgrounds, so many different nationalities. But what brings us together is that sacrifice. So we're all together, and we're all able to chant Hare Krishna. We're all already, you know, we all dance together. And we all have this mission of wanting to share it. Now, I know that one of the groups has to leave soon, so let me just read this one story that I especially liked. And I think you'll like it too. And it's about the power of the Bhagavad Gita and the mercy of Krishna. So this story starts out with a burglar, okay? Everybody know what a burglar is? What's a burglar?
A robber.
Yeah, it's a robber. Somebody who's they just go and they steal things from people. So this burglar, who belonged to a gang of thieves, was in an apartment searching for valuables when he heard a noise at the door. He was like, uh-oh, the people came home. He became scared and started to climb out the window. Frustrated that all his trouble had come to naught, he quickly grabbed whatever was at hand, a book lying on the kitchen table, and then ran off. When the burglar arrived home and looked at the book, he saw that the title read, Bhagavad Gita as it is. He didn't have the slightest interest in such a book, but since he had stolen it, he figured he just might as well read it. So he opened it up and began. Soon he was becoming more and more interested in philosophy and spiritual life. He started visiting the local temple and gradually began chanting Hare Krishna. After some time, he brought his gang members to the temple and introduced them to Krishna consciousness. Before long, they were all regularly visiting the temple to render services like cleaning and driving. This was in Siberia, by the way. When devotees asked them what they did for a living, they simply answered, God allows everyone to survive. But there was a problem. The burglar's wife became disturbed to see the great change in his character. He was losing interest in his occupation. She worried about their income. How are they going to make money? How is he going to make money if he can't steal? To make matters worse, her father was one of the biggest gangsters in town. Infuriated to find his son-in-law breaking with their tradition of thievery, the father-in-law threatened to kill him if he didn't stop his spiritual practices, which his father-in-law considered an insult to their great heritage. So the burglar was caught in a real bind. But one day his wife went to visit some relatives in Moscow, and while shopping in a big marketplace, she saw a young man carrying a stack of books. He was walking around without approaching anyone. After he had walked past many people, he went straight up to her, gave her a book, and said, "This is the best book in the world. You should read it because you'll really like it." The devotee didn't know her and had no idea her husband was already chanting Hare Krishna. The burglar's wife was intrigued that out of hundreds of people in the marketplace, the devotee had come up to her. She bought the book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then she went home and read it cover to cover. Now convinced about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, she joined forces with her husband and asked her father to leave the house. The couple started to visit the temple together, and soon the man began going out with the devotees to distribute books. As he became more and more keen to do that service, he realized, "Formerly, I would walk by so many mansions thinking, how can I enter them and steal something? Now I think, let me go to that house and give the occupants of Krishna's mercy in the form of Prabhupada's books." So, amazing story. How the mercy of Lord Chaitanya can actually be given to anybody. There's butchers that have become devotees, you know, burglars who have become devotees. And so no one is too fallen, because Srila Prabhupada is Patita Pavana. He is a deliverer of the most fallen. And the holy name can wipe away so many sins. A while ago we were talking, I asked a question about fear personified, like who is fear personified? And it was a little unclear. But when I put it into the Veda base, fear personified, it came up as Durga. Prabhupada calls Durga personified fear, and he describes her. Here she is standing there chopping off people's heads, and then she makes a garland of the heads, and she wears it. And then one hand she has her chopper, and the other hand she has another head. So she is very powerful, and people are very afraid of her, so they worship her, right? They worship her. "My dear Kali, you know, here's a goat for you. I'm a criminal, but I'm sacrificing a ghost. A goat, please make me successful." But Prabhupada described, just like there may be a superintendent of police, he compares Durga to the superintendent of police. There's still someone above that superintendent. So, and there's someone above Durga, and that's Krishna. So as soon as the holy name is uttered, all those entities, you know, even though they're very fearful, they disperse because of the chanting of the holy name. So whenever we're in a difficult situation, you know, a fearful situation, we can remember that chanting. And you know, there's another verse in Bhagavad Gita, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samud Bhavan Mahashano Mahapapnam Vidinam Hiya Vairinam. And it describes that how anger evolves, you know? And so we see so much anger in our world. You may have heard of road rage. Has anybody heard of road rage? You know, people are driving their car. You've heard of it. A few of you have heard of it. So road rage, you know, people are driving their car and maybe somebody drives in front of them and they become furious at that. They may even, and it's happened, where they take out a gun and they shoot somebody for going in front of them. And it happens all the time. It's a big, big deal. And I was reading an article about anger in preparation with this class, and they said that, you know, millions and millions of people suffer. They said 15 million, but they said that's actually just the tip of the iceberg, that there's so many people suffering from this disease of anger. And, you know, they have their different solutions about how to handle it and what to do for it. And even ourselves, we may suffer from anger. But actually, that the verse that I quote, it said, it is lust only our Arjuna, born of the mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So what is lust? Lust is actually love of God that's perverted. You know, so we have that original love for God in the spiritual world. So much love for God we have. But somehow or other, we have an idea that we want to be the controller. So we come to the material world, and we're enveloped in this lust, and, you know, which can be transformed to anger. And, you know, what can we do about it? Because I was thinking, even in the scriptures, there's so many instances of anger. Can anyone think of an instance where one of the sages becomes angry over some event? Yes. Durvasamuni, he's a famous one, isn't he? Whoa, you know, he gets so angry. Everyone's like afraid of him when he came to take prasadam, you know, at the house of the Pandavas. And Draupadi's like, oh my God, he's here. And, you know, how are we going to feed him? We didn't have any notice. And she finally finds, she's like praying to Krishna. And Krishna is able, you know, he finds a little piece of something stuck to the pot and we're able to feed them all. But yeah, Durvasamuni, he's a great sage, but he still suffers from anger. Anybody else? Like Govardhan Puja is coming up. Who do we know in that pastime? Lord Indra. And why did he become so angry? Why did Lord Indra become so angry? Anybody know why? Yes, Gopal.
He was proud.
He was so proud. And he didn't like the fact he called, who is this little talkative boy, Krishna? Now, who does he think he is? Like, you know, Nanda Maharaj and all the residents from Vrindavan, they're getting ready to do this special sacrifice, right? And Krishna comes and says, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And Nanda Maharaj, he's a little taken aback because, you know, Krishna's just a little boy. At the same time, he remembers the astrologer saying, this boy is so powerful, you know, that he's like the Supreme Person of Godhead. So, you know, he's a little taken aback, but he's like, he's listening. And Krishna's saying, why are you doing the sacrifice? So he tries to explain to him, well, if you want your crops to grow and you want rain, we have to worship Indra because he's in charge of the rain. And the rain comes down and waters our crops, and that's how we live. But Krishna's like, no, 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 no. He said, the rain falls everywhere, not just here in Vrindavan when you do your sacrifice. He's like, Krishna is in charge. We didn't say Krishna. He said, you know, actually, Govardhan Hill has everything here that we need. It can provide everything. And the rain falls everywhere. So he convinced them, which is pretty amazing when you think about it, but he is Krishna. He convinced them to stop the sacrifice and do the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill instead. And Krishna took the form of Govardhan Hill. So that's the pastime that's coming up. But again, anger is such an important part of it. Even, you know, we can look at, what's another incident? Anybody can think of somebody else who suffered from anger in the scriptures? That was, I think so, yeah. Also Durvasamuni, yeah. Yeah, and he Daksha's another one, that's right. He threw the Sudarshan chakra, but, you know, it came after him. That was a big problem. And even at the, you know, even as the Bhagavatam begins, we have Maharaj Prickett who comes into the little hut where the sage is meditating, and he doesn't offer him any water or sitting place, so Maharaj Prickett becomes angry, right? So much instance of anger, and some of us may also, from time to time, suffer from anger. So what can we do? What can we do when we feel this anger coming up? You know, what can we do about it? I was just talking to Kishore, who is one of the Mayapuris, and he told me that his father-in-law is like such a peaceful person, you know, that he never ever gets angry. So he asked him, you know, how do you do that? How are you able to like separate that yourself from anger, you know, when things come up? And he said, well, when I start to feel the anger, I try to remove myself and look at it and think, why am I becoming so angry? Generally, it has something to do with a false ego, just like with Indra, right? He was offended. They weren't worshiping him, they were worshiping Krishna. So oftentimes we get hurt feelings. Sometimes that really brings up our, actually it first brings up our hurt feelings, and then And then it brings up the anger. Anger, they say, is hurt that's repressed. So, you know, we can learn how to deal with these kinds of emotions that we have, this anger and fear, by stepping back, taking a look at it, analyzing it, and seeing if we, instead of becoming involved in the modes, in the mode of passion and ignorance, if we can maybe just rise above it. So how could that happen? Anybody? Even the gentleman in the back, even Pushkar Prabhu. How can we rise above that anger? What can we do? What? What can we do? Okay, so we can...
Breathe.
What?
Breathe, count, calm yourself.
Yeah, we can calm, that's true. We can, that's true. Yeah, I remember when... This is a good story, because it's about Raghunath. Everybody knows Raghunath, who does all the fire yoga. You know, your dad, Raghunath. So when he was a little boy in my class, he was really angry, because his father was supposed to come home at a certain time, and... He postponed his trip. He wasn't coming home. So Raghunath, he was like, I mean, you could practically see steam coming out of his head. He was so mad, you know. So I tried to talk to him a little bit. I said, okay, let's just chant. And I said, Raghunath, just chant. Just try to give yourself to the chanting, and let's see what happens. Because, you know, I think it's going to help you. So we chanted we chanted the rounds that we did every day. And at the end of it, I said, Raghunath, so how do you feel now? He goes, it works, he said. I feel so much better, you know? And he was able to kind of work through some of that anger. So, you know, that is something that's very tangible that we can do. And, you know, sometimes we may have a good reason to be angry. Once Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and some man in the audience stood up and started to heckle him, you know, make fun of him or, you know, make comments. You know what Prabhupada did? He didn't do anything. He just said later, he goes, I can understand that I must have offended this man in my past life. And that's why I was getting this arrest. This was happening. So if we can be humble enough to see, you know, when those things happen, it can be a past reaction. If we can be humble enough, you know, to just chant our way through it and look at it, then we can really make something of our lives. We can really make quick progress. So that's one of the messages of the Bhagavatam. There's so many. I love the verse, the peace formula, because it makes life so simple. Like Prabhupada says, all these politicians and all these lawmakers, you know, they have so many ways that they want to create peace. You know, they pass a bill. You know, they're going to do all this welfare work. They're going to give food stamps to people who need food stamps and who can't manage it. You know, they don't have enough money to buy food. So many different ways of trying to help to make peace. But he said they may be able to do a little bit, but they'll never ever really be able to bring peace to the world, because the only way that can happen is by sacrifice to Krishna. So if we remember that as being something foremost in our lives, when things aren't going well, things aren't going the way that we want to, you all must know that, you know, different periods of our lives or even different days of the week can be difficult. But if we chant Hare Krishna and we transcend it, we're able to, you know, move on. You know, sometimes people will have such a bad time in their life, they'll resort to suicide, you know? They'll resort to suicide. But they don't know what's right down the line. They don't know what's right around the corner. So we have to... Anyway, thank you for your kind attention. Have a wonderful day. Look forward to seeing the Govardhan Pooj celebration. Okay, is there anybody have a comment or a question? Yes, Madame Hanprabhu, and then Pani.
Thank you for a nice class. Two questions, I guess. Maybe you could explain, you used the word sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times it has different definitions according to different contexts.
That's
we
true.
Have a material sacrifice for going to school. So in Krishna consciousness, how are we to understand when Krishna talks about sacrifice, what he's referring to?
That's a good
and
question.
Then one more
okay.
is the anger is like the third one down on the line there. From contemplating out to the senses, one develops attachment, and then from attachment, what happens there? Oh, then he has lust, isn't it? I get the two mixed up. And then the third one down, or the fourth one down, is anger. So if you've already done the first three, can you stop it at that stage, or is it best to do it before the first three already got you going?
It's best to start it before. How's that for an answer?
How do you do that?
How do you do it?
That's connected
okay,
to
well,
the first question
about sacrifice, you know, that means that, you know, giving our valuable time and energy to Krishna consciousness. Just like, you know, there's so many hours in a day and we all have so much to do in the day. So to, you know, take the time to come out to Bhagavatam class and hear and discuss, that is sacrifice. And so as we do that throughout our day, you know, devotees, their goal is to 24 hours a day to use that in Krishna service. So does that work for a definition for sacrifice? Okay. And as we do that, if we're actually concentrating on the goal, you know, on Krishna consciousness, then most likely we won't become so attached, and then we won't go all the way down the line to anger. You know, one very important aspect of our lives is understanding that Krishna knows exactly what we need, and he gives us exactly what we need, because one of the unfortunate aspects of Kali Yuga is that they're so agitated. Actually, the one word Prabhupada used to describe Kali Yuga was dissatisfaction. I remember even quite a while ago when I went to India, and, you know, generally, I remember India being described, you know, some little remote villages. One of the villages was heralded as having the most peaceful people of anywhere. But on this particular trip to India, I was going past this famous slum in Bombay. I mean, it's so huge, you know, and it's just incredible. What I saw that was alarming to me was antennas, you know, like TV antennas. And I just thought, wow, what a recipe for disaster, because you have these people living in such really poor conditions, and yet they're being shown everything that they don't have, and they're being agitated to want it. So that causes so much distress. So if we can remember, if we can appreciate, not only remember, but appreciate that Krishna knows exactly what we need to be able to become purified and go home back to Godhead. He knows if he gives us $1 million, and some people can handle it. Like Ambarish Prabhu has done a great job with his millions and using it in Krishna's service. But, you know, oftentimes people, you think, well, if I got that money, I'd do this and I'd do that, but you just never know. But Krishna does know. That's the amazing, Krishna does know. And so he doesn't give it to us because he knows exactly what we need. And even if it's a difficult situation that we're in, you know, sometimes they say hindsight's 20/20. So sometimes down the line, you know, we went through a difficult time, but we look back at it and we go, wow, that was hard, but look at all the lessons that I learned from that. And you find yourself being able to help other people in the same situation, you know, going through it. And sometimes we're grateful for those difficult times because it does bring out, so much brings out our Krishna consciousness. Like, Maharani, do you mind if I use you for an example? Say no. Yeah, you. So Maharani, you know, Maharani's 93 years old, and right before she came to Alachua, she was very, very ill. You know, she got sepsis, some terrible infection, and really everybody, including herself, thought she was going to die. And she couldn't hear anything, she couldn't see anything, and all she had was the Maha Mantra. She said she just chanted constantly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, over and over again. You know, that's all she could do. So when she came out of it, she had a nice residence on the ocean in Bradenton, that's near Sarasota. But she told her daughter and her friends, all she wanted to do is come to Hare Krishna temple. That's all she wanted to do. She's a Prabhupada disciple. No, she's, you know, she was initiated way back when. All she wanted to do is come to Hare Krishna temple. So because of that desire, you know, here she is. And every time I go in the back, our little back cabin to visit Maharani, she's chanting Hare Krishna, you know? It's like really, it's quite amazing, really. Now that I've thoroughly embarrassed you. Okay, and you have a question? What? Okay. Oh, yeah.
You're talking mostly about japa, and Krishna does say in chapter 10, text 25, that of sacrifices I am japa.
Yeah.
But then there's another incarnation of Krishna who kind of has a different angle on it. And Srila Prabhupada said that this kirtan is forced meditation, but the sankirtan is a yuga dharma.
Right.
That means out in the street, sankirtan.
Right.
So that was just a little add-on.
Yeah, I appreciate
the other is also the same personality and his transcendental brother. Their pastimes include feigning and expressing and experiencing anger. They weren't negatively affected by it.
And different kind, right?
Yeah, because it's a different form of anger. And I immediately thought of Hanuman and Lord Ramachandra, both who, in their pastimes, displayed anger, and then they employed it in service, or they instigated purification on the part of another individual.
Mm.
It was actually last Sunday's Srila Prabhupada's lecture. He was talking about alcohol and said, nothing is bad. But even though the result may be bad with the alcohol, for example.
Mm.
So it kind of connected that. Anger, well, it's part of our...
One of the emotions.
Part of our makeup.
Yeah, that's true.
It can't be denied. It's there,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It can be employed.
Good point.
Potentially.
Yes.
If purified.
Yeah, you could be angry that Kali Yuga is progressing and take your anger and go out and distribute books.
Yeah, if you get angry about the right thing and deal with it in the right way, then it's an instigator or something that can promote betterment. And you don't let your children run wild. And so we also shouldn't let society run wild and become comatose about it and thinking we're controlling our anger. There are points in which anger should be explored. And it's frustrating, usually it hinges on frustration.
Right.
So maybe you'd like to talk about the connection between frustration and anger.
Well, I think it was at least partially addressed. Frustration usually comes from, you know, maybe wanting something that we don't have, or, you know, there's so many different reasons for it, but trying to accept what Krishna's given us and being happy with it, that's the quality of a Brahma, is a Brahma is satisfied whatever Krishna gives him. So I think that's so essential. You know, I come back to that point a lot because... like Prabhupada said, if you had to use one word to describe Kali Yuga, it would be dissatisfaction. Why couldn't I have this? Why couldn't I have that? Why couldn't I be this? Why couldn't I be that? But thank you for the point on anger. It's totally true that everything should be employed.
You're welcome.
Okay, anybody else? All right. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.